Hey guys, welcome back to the Music That Made America. I'm Jacob.
And I'm Jordy.
I'm Noah.
And welcome back after a long one-year hiatus. We are back and ready to get back into it. We'll explain the story of what happened after this new episode.
All right. So today we are going to be doing Paul McCartney. So we are jumping from the 50s onto the 60s as we feel it is right. And of course, yes. We love Paul McCartney. At the time of actually writing the script for this, it was like Beatles Appreciation Month.
Of course, he is right.
So and, it's just taken a minute to release. So
and we decided that the best option would be to cover each Beatle separately to give you full Beatle coverage. So please enjoy.
All right.
So his full name was Sir James Paul McCartney. He was born June 18th, 1942 in Liverpool, England. His father, James McCartney, worked in the Liverpool Cotton Exchange and was a pianist with the local band. His mother, Mary McCartney, was a midwife to everyone who doesn't know what that is. She worked as someone to help deliver and care for newborn babies. So basically, you can already see, like, get some insight on his life. His dad did have band experience, so I'm guessing that's where he kind of, like, you know, like, he was probably inspired by his dad, obviously.
Yeah. And it's just like interesting to look at this, how like some people in like the 50s, right, they didn't really have family experience, as we've covered, like
that family. Is true,
right? So it's interesting how like as we move up a generation, we see their their parents are really into music.
What do you think, Noah?
Yeah, no, you guys hit it right on the head. I mean, definitely an interesting childhood and somebody who can't really relate to us considering he was born in England and we're American. So definitely a lot of differences there, but that's a lot of where the famous musicians came from at the time.
Yep, and that music really did make America. So some people even say that she delivered babies on her bicycles, going back to his mother's job. McCartney grew up, like most of the working class in England. He had a close relationship with his extended family, and his mother was actually diagnosed with breast cancer in 1955 when Paul was only 11 years old.
Now that's just terrible. Awful, honestly. That's such a terrible tragedy.
Good question, guys.
What's your question? Quick question.
How was he born in 1942 and then his mother was diagnosed in 1955 when he was 11?
Who said 85?
No, 55, but then he'd be 13.
Well, Noah.
Bad math on your part. Sorry, guys. All right, continuing.
Okay. Well, anyway, sorry about that, guys. We will have to check in on our scripts department later.
What? Whatever. It's stupid. In the year 1957, Paul McCartney met John Lennon for the first time in a church gathering where John's band was playing. So look at that. They're all young, right? According to Noah here, our math genius, at the age of 15 years old, Paul himself met John Lennon, the great.
Imagine that encounter, like two of the biggest legends in music history meeting up for the first time.
As like,
it's like God meeting God.
Like, we want to know down in like in our Instagram, like, who you guys think was better, Paul McCartney or John Lennon? That will come later.
All right. So, Noah, right, would you like to continue?
In the same year, Lennon asked McCartney to join his band, and the two became the lead songwriters for their band called the Quarrymen. And then a couple years later, after Paul McCartney's mother, passed away in 1958, Paul was encouraged by his father to further pursue music, and he began, alongside Lennon, to start learning instruments. He learned them in an unusual way because he learned them by the ear. So that's a little bit unusual.
That is like very impressive, honestly. Learning by the ear as a musician myself is a very hard task to do. And the fact that it was the 60s and there's no YouTube or anything like that to help you even in the first place with no instructor whatsoever, it is very impressive that he's able to pick up on multiple different instruments just using his ear.
Well, right. As a more talented musician myself, I see it's easier to learn by ear once you have like an understanding of like the instrument, but just starting off with like nothing from scratch and learning the instrument by ear is a huge accomplishment.
That's really I would like to say, as the most professional musician here, I disagree with his beginning statement.
Well,
and I would like to say, as the best musician here in terms of playing every instrument you could possibly imagine, I can tell you that learning with the ear is very hard. No, I'm kidding. I don't play an instrument.
As the most talented, not professional musician here, I concur with Noah's statement.
Let's go back. So after he met John Lennon, McCartney wrote his first song at age 16 called When I'm 64, and he hoped to sell that song over to Frank Sinatra. So that's interesting.
Legend.
Big man.
A young legend trying to hook up with an older legend and try to sell their music there. And then in 1960, which is a few years later, the Quarrymen was their band, changed the name, and that became the Beatles. So we'll have a separate episode dedicated just to the Beatles later. But for now, you have two guys in McCartney and Lennon, and they became the Beatles to start.
I have a question for you guys. So what do you really, like, just seeing John Lennon, right, or Paul McCartney, my fault, he's more known as, like, a classical rock artist, and then Frank Sinatra was maybe known more for the jazz and blues sides of things.
Yeah, so, that's like, true.
How do you think it went down? Yeah.
I think that, blues and classic rock, they have a lot to do with each other. So I think he was hoping that maybe, you know, Frank Sinatra would kind of work with him in a way and maybe kind of like, I don't know, like kind of combine that both musical aspects, because clearly Paul McCartney came to Frank Sinatra with this song that he wrote, but maybe he wanted Frank Sinatra maybe to play it, you know, like he was open to suggestions, as if like Frank Sinatra wanted to play it a little differently, right, even with the same lyrics and such.
Yeah, and Frank Sinatra.
And honestly, the other thing too is that it could be a networking thing. Like, you don't know, like maybe Paul was trying to kind of find some connections and a mentor within the music industry, and maybe the person that he was kind of inspired by as a kid was Frank Sinatra, and that was kind of the person he wanted to connect with as he got a little bit older.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure. I don't think that really worked out too well for him. And in 1969,
anyway, guys, yeah,
continuing. In 1969, McCartney married Linda Eastman, an American photographer. They were married for 30 years, and in the 1970s, the Beatles expanded, breaking the hearts of many listeners around the world. So,
yeah,
that just sucked.
I know. So, I mean, like, in general, like, the Beatles breaking up, like, that was just, like, it hits, like, it killed so many listeners in general. I mean, like, imagine, like, you have this giant band that, like, everyone's listening to, everyone loves, and, like, for years upon years, they're coming out with hit upon hit upon hit. And all of a sudden, you find out that this band that you've been listening to since you were maybe a kid is, like, oh, we're done. Like, that's it. We're breaking up, you know?
Yeah, completely. They're just, like, such an inspiration to many. And it you can't really compare that with anything we'd know, like, today in the 21st century. Like, the Beatles were, like, their own thing, and they're such legends. Like people, like, describe nowadays a comparison that wouldn't even be close would be, like, One Direction. That used to be a famous band that broke up. But it didn't have the mass effect that the Beatles had on the entire
100%. World.
So, continuing, McCartney's still in love with the spotlight. He released the first of any other Beatles independent track. So he was the original, he was the first person to release a independent track, and it was called McCartney. And basically this happened in 1970, the same year that the Beatles broke up.
Right.
The album had mixed feelings by critiques, but the public actually really loved it. And this just shows you that sometimes critics don't know what the listener wants. The public clearly loved it, but the critics judged it, I would say, a little maybe harshly, because maybe they were comparing it to the Beatles, which was the work of four people compared to the work of one person. So that could be a possibility. What do you guys think?
As a person who works in media myself, I can tell you that sometimes the media can be harsh. So I mean, that's pretty much as simple as it gets.
I'm not really sure how the payment works of, like, how Paul would have gotten paid in this situation. I'm pretty sure he gets paid by the public, right? So I think his top priority is playing for the public and not for the critics. So I think overall this album was a win rather than a lose.
Yeah, honestly.
And it was a good way for him to bounce back after the Beatles kind of broke up too, right? Like, right. This is like something that he had to get off his chest.
100%, especially because, like, obviously everyone loved it. But anyway, so let's continue. So the success encouraged the creation of the band The Wings, which remained popular throughout the 70s. And let me tell you guys something. This band, phenomenal songs. I mean,
a lot of hits.
I have so many of their songs on my playlist.
What's your favorite?
I would have to say... Band on the Run. Yeah, Band on the Run. I would say that. That's, like, an excellent song. Mm-hmm. That is, like, my favorite out of all of them.
All right, let's continue. So once he started The Wings, he was able to win 2 Grammys and made multiple hit songs with the band. And then kind of moving on to his family life, McCartney raised 4 kids, one of which was Heather Eastman, who was not his biological daughter, but actually his stepdaughter. And then another, some pretty sad stuff about Paul. He was arrested in 1980 for marijuana possession in Japan. He was in prison for like a week and a half. That's and crazy. Then,
I mean, like, honestly, like, that's kind of like you'd expect that. They kind of, the Beatles in itself were, like, very much of that hippie kind of vibe. So I'm sure, you know, like, if the basic of whatever drugs they were doing, marijuana was definitely something that Paul McCartney was doing. So it's not definitely really a surprise. It's definitely not a surprise that he was arrested in Japan.
No, I'm not surprised either. And then another really sad thing was, and everybody knows this, his longtime partner and his friend, John Lennon, was obviously murdered in New York City, so that was a rough thing for him. And after Paul had to witness John's death and deal with it, he stopped touring for almost a decade, but he was able to record new music and collaborate with some big names like Stevie Wonder, Michael Jackson. And then finally, 9 years later in 1989, he began to tour live and launched a world tour and was able to create a triple album. And it was he was able to, on that tour, break the record for the largest audience in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, of 184,000 people in their stadium. So that is a huge audience for a absolute legend like Paul McCartney.
100%, I agree. And especially, like, let's think about this for a second. The Beatles, phenomenal band, take the world by storm, and when they're separated, everyone thinks there's no possibility that one could be successful without the other. And then you have Paul McCartney just releasing hits still consistently.
Yeah.
And he's playing, some might even say he's having more success than when he was with the Beatles. Obviously, that's very debatable. But I'm saying, like, look at all his progress he made alone. It's very impressive for someone who's not in a 4-person band anymore, who has to do all this stuff with, you know, like, really just, like, by himself instead of with the 4 most creative songwriters on the planet.
Right. No, it's just crazy how he's known worldwide and so famous, and he still managed, like, in Japan, like, if someone that famous, like, a legend himself, would just is using, like, marijuana, something pretty common in America for him, and just to get arrested for that and put in prison is crazy. I'm not sure, like, how different the rules are there, but I'd assume that he'd be, like, given a little bit of more, like special privilege. Yeah, leeway.
Oh, okay, I see. Because you're saying that he was, like, so successful and stuff like that. Like, you're kind of relating it to kind of how it was weird that he was arrested in the first place.
Yeah,
I would agree with that. But let's move on.
All right.
So, go ahead.
All right, in 1987, he collaborated with Elvis Costello. That's crazy. Big names to collaborate with. And and going back a few years before, in 1994, McCartney took 4 years from his solo career to work on the Beatles anthology project. Right? If you don't know what this is, it is a documentary on the Beatles themselves. This project, continue.
I was gonna say honestly, there recently, it's kind of relatable, but Disney published a documentary, and I believe that the original people who made this documentary in 1994 had so much footage that they left out of the Beatles anthology project. And so basically what this guy did was, is when he made this documentary for Disney Plus, he took all of that footage and kind of mishmashed it into this big 10 episode or 8, whatever, however many episodes, but all about the Beatles. But he used all this footage. It really gives you an inner scoop. I recommend people watch it. We're not sponsored by Disney Plus, but But I do recommend people give that.
Could be sponsored by Disney Plus if they want to sponsor us.
No, we do not. I am very interested though.
Yes.
MusicThatMadeAmerica@gmail.com.
Okay. However, so the project included several albums, interviews, and television episodes. In 1997, he released both a rock album and a classic album. So he's kind of mishmashing with his style. And in 1998, unfortunately, tragedy struck. His wife died from cancer.
For a guy so successful, he's had a lot of rough moments in his life. Terrible.
We've noticed that with a lot of these guys. You know, like they're big and famous, but like their lives are just like they're like so like sometimes they can get very sad. I guess you could say. Yeah, like it's you'd think that because they have a lot of money, they'd be like, and they're so successful that their life is like perfect. But then you're reading this and you're realizing their life is not perfect. They're literally like. They're human. Like, they can have downside. Like, they have these issues that we all have. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of just like not saying it's nice, but it's sometimes it's a shocker to people, I guess you could say. Yeah. Like that these people are like, you know.
Yeah, man, like Pobody's nerfed, bro. Like it's crazy, like so many people suffer from tragedy, right? But it's the way these people who responded in a way that brought them greatness and tried to balance out, which of course you never could balance out a human life with like music and fame and stuff, but he tried to channel in that energy to something else and something more productive, which is helpful for everybody.
Yep. All right, so continuing on the theme of tragedy, he also watched the 9/11 events from JFK Airport in New York City. So that's kind of horrifying to be so close, as I was back when I was little. He was also one of the organizers for the post 9/11 New York City concert. So that was a good charitable thing for him to do and a way for him to help out a city that was in distress after 9/11.
I agree.
Yeah.
And then after that, he started touring around the world again. And then he got married for the second time to Heather Mills, who's a model and actress. They had a baby in 2003 after they got married in 2002. And then they split up in 2006. And he also, in that sort of time, he performed with Bruce Springsteen in London. So that was a cool sort of mashup that they did. And then the concert was actually cut short by authorities because it exceeded its scheduled time. But still, just a cool event between two guys who are world famous.
100%. You know, it's really crazy. If you really think about this timeline here, you got him in the Beatles, then in the Wings, then on a solo, like basically on this like solo spree all the way up until 2006, like, or even 2009. And he's still going today. But like, it's just amazing to think that he really started all of this in the 60s. So he's been doing this for almost almost 60 years by this point, which is it's just truly amazing. I'd have to say that like, he's extremely dedicated. He's still pushing out hits upon hits and he's, you know, he's getting old, but he's just still doing it. Like, he's pushing through.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Want me to continue?
Go for it.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So in 2009, he teamed up with his daughters to form Meat Free Monday, which is a organization that supports lack of meat consumption, just to keep meat out there for people. Then he got married again to Nancy Chaville in October 2011. And then he started to collaborate, even, you know, we've mentioned some of the other people he's collaborated with, but some more modern artists. Kanye West is one name that he worked with in 2013. He also worked with Rihanna. So pretty cool that he's gone from a legendary Beatle back in the 60s to people who are now really famous in the 2010s, which I think is a pretty cool thing.
Wait, so I'd just like to, like, point something out. So we made a little bit of an error. A few seconds ago when we said that the nonprofit organization aimed the truth is that the nonprofit organization actually aims to raise awareness of people's extreme meat consumptions in the first place.
It's not to get people meat.
No, yeah, that's what I mean. To be able to save, just be able to save the animals and
keep
meat.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Oh, maybe I didn't say it that way, but that's what I meant.
Keep the living meat here.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
All right, moving on. Where are we? Performing in 2013, he headlined the Bonnaroo Music and Arts Festival. Bonnaroo. I'm sorry. Bonnaroo Music and Arts Festival. Performers at this festival included Tom Petty, Billy Idol, John Oates of Hall & Oates, and Jeff Tweedy and Bjork.
Yeah, oh my god.
Jeff Tweedy and Bjork. I don't know who some of these people are, but I'm sure they are. I think what these people represent is, I know some of these names, but not all of them. All
right, let's say like Tom Petty, Billy Idol, John Oates of Hall & Oates. Like, that's just crazy. These are big names.
They represent like worldwide artists, right? And these are people famous, and they're each like respected regions. So having them all come together for like one festival was like a really big event.
100%.
And he's done a lot of stuff like that where he's worked with other artists. We talked about it before with Bruce Springsteen and other people.
Yeah.
Of course.
Definitely. In the March of 2016, he announced he was releasing Pure McCartney, a solo album, which spanned his legendary career in June of that year. Wow.
Oh, my. That's like
so crazy. That's a long album.
Yep.
Yeah, extremely long.
He then kicked off his tour, another tour in 2016. He performed at the Desert Trip Festival, which included the Rolling Stones, among others, including The Who. And then 2017, he took his talent to the big screen. He actually appeared in Pirates of the Caribbean, one of the movies with Johnny Depp. In 2018, 2 days after he turned 76, he released the ballad I Don't Know, and the more upbeat Come On To Me, which is a part of an upcoming album that he created called the Egypt Station. And later in 2018, he went on the Freshen Up Tour. So he was able to participate in that, and then was also in another festival. So he has been doing stuff up until basically the present day.
Crazy.
100%. It's just nuts.
And he wrote a book in 2019, a children's book.
See, this doesn't stop. I mean, like, look at this man. He's just like, every second he's doing something else. He's got tours set up. He's got like so much things on the line. It's clear that with the man with so much, because he has a lot of money. Let's just put it that, right, with so much money and success, you'd think that like he would be like, maybe it's time to rein in the towel, but he keeps on pushing and pushing. He doesn't, it's not like the money is like, I feel like the money's not important to him. Like, it's really just about like keeping his name alive and like making sure people like hear his, like what, like his amazing songwriting and like great, like just artistic talents.
And by the way, you just mentioned, Kobe, about his wealth. His net worth is $1.2 billion. I just looked it up.
That's crazy.
That's amazing. He's done so much good for this world, and he's brought so much, and of course he was awarded for it, such as in like 2010, where he won when President Barack Obama himself awarded him the Gershwin Prize, the highest award a musician can win in America. He was the first international musician to receive this reward as well. And then 2 years later, he was named MusiCare's Person of the Year, just to name a couple of his many awards that he rightfully deserves.
Yep.
Right. And as much as he enjoyed like music, he enjoyed filmmaking, writing, painting, meditation, and activism, which we could see throughout his life.
Oh my gosh, plenty of activism. He was a big, big activist when it came to protesting like Vietnam and such like that.
Yeah, doing good for this world. He also was a vegetarian for a portion of his continuing life. Little fun fact. And in his 70s, he continues to tour, selling out huge arenas and showing no signs of slowing down. Right? He was amazing. And just to finalize a little quote, when asked about retiring, he said, "Why would I retire? Sit at home and watch TV? No thanks. I would rather be out playing." That really just sums up his life.
That quote has to like slap so hard. I don't even know how to I don't even know how to describe how like touching that is. Like, it is truly amazing. This guy had like his life, it was just like success after success. He was very lucky and fortunate. I mean, obviously, when it came to his family life, it was a little different, but he pushed on through with those family matters. and he pushed it back, like he pushed it out to the world. He gave the world everything he had in his head. I think that's truly amazing. I think it takes a very strong person to deal with, like, not only was he dealing with these like situations with his family, but he was also dealing with them at the time when he was making music. So he was able to push it through, I guess you could say.
Can I ask you guys a question?
No, for sure. And by the way, he's still doing a lot of stuff now. Like, he's not retired now. He's still working, and he's just continues to be an icon. Like, this is not going anywhere anytime soon.
Can I ask you guys a question?
Yes.
So there's, like, mixed, like, opinions of this, but do you, like, not using this term lightly, do you think that Paul McCartney was a literal genius?
I would say that he was a genius in his own way.
Like a musical genius.
I wouldn't say he's the best of all time. I would say he's the greatest that we've had, like, in a while, I would say.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Like, I mean, like, he's not gone. He's still making songs. But I'm saying the greatest that we've had, as in, like, I've heard the songs from today, I don't hear that same crunch as what the Beatles gives me. It doesn't satisfy me as much as when I turn on a Beatles song or something like that, and Paul McCartney wrote it. I really can hear that, like, you know, he dedicated time to putting it, like, he really worked hard on that song to make sure that we liked it. And he was doing it for us. As much as he was pushing out his own ideas, he was doing it for the listener. He cared about his listeners. You could clearly tell that. He never cheaped out on any album. He made sure that what he was putting out, he wants his name on. He never, you know what I mean? Like, he never really I've never heard a Beatles album or even a Paul McCartney album in the first place that felt to me
anything
like
less than what it needed to be.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. Well, guys,
all right.
Thank
good,
you,
guys.
Thank you guys so much for listening to the podcast. If you made it to this point, we very much appreciate it.
All right. So before we go, we promised at the end of the episode that we would explain what happened over the past year that caused us not to
record. Promise that.
I did. So let me explain to you guys what happened. So basically, last year was very complicated with COVID and everything, and our schedules just didn't align up as well as we would wish they had. So we decided to take a break, and the break turned out to be way longer than expected. But this year, we're back. And
2022 is going to be the year of the music that made America. We're going to grow our platform, our community to new lengths. If you want to watch us and follow our journey, I believe our Instagram is at The Music That Made America. If you have any business inquiries, please feel free to email themusicthatmadeamerica@gmail.com.
And of course, listen, guys, thank you for 2,000 viewers.
Thank you so much.
That's like an amazing accomplishment from us. We really haven't been pushing out in about a year, and we really didn't like deserve it that much. But you guys stuck through. You guys wanted more, and we're giving you more.
All right.
So thank you.
Any final words, Noah?
No, I'm just excited to continue keeping this going.
Yeah.
All right. See you guys.